He's a DCM for District 5A, I believe, in Savannah. Every time I come up here to the state, I see him. He's came and spoken at my home group a time or two. He's got a great story. He sponsors a friend of mine that I met when he first came in AA and then moved to Savannah, and he sponsors him. I know he's active in the program and works a good program, and he's got a good story. So if y'all would, help me welcome Charlie Wye.
Man, I ain't seen these many eyes looking back at me since Kason. Hey, everybody, I'm Charlie Gow, and I'm an alcoholic. DCM of 5C, Savannah, Georgia. And, I guess I should be remiss if I didn't ask, I guess, thank the, supposedly the man that has the least power in this room for allowing me the privilege to share my story with the state of Georgia. Heard a story about the old boy that was, they asked him to come speak up in Wyoming, up in cowboy country and cattle country. He got up there in about 97 minutes. He was just pouring out his experience slopping dope on all this. And he was just about to get sober. And he looked up in the back, and here come these two long, tall cowboys, had these 45 hog legs on their strapped to their leg, and they was walking up the aisle. He looked over at the chairperson, and the chairperson said, "Oh, don't worry about that part. They ain't after you." He said, "Phew." He said, "They after that SOB that invited you." So, Mr. Dick, you may want to watch your back for a time or two. It is a real honor and a privilege to be here and to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous and to share my story and give all of y'all about 45 minutes practice of inventory taking, and I'm sure that'll be done. I never get behind one of these things without recognizing the people that keep me here on a daily basis. One of them is my sponsor, David Chapman. He is the alternate state delegate of Area 16. And if he continues to do what he's been doing, and January the 27th in my home group, he'll receive an 18-year chip of continuous sobriety. My service sponsor is his beautiful wife, Lucille. That if she continues to do what she's been doing, January 1, she'll be 17 years sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. My grand sponsor is Butch Otis. August 14th, I went over to his home group, the Garden City group, and saw him be presented with a 24-year chip of continuous sobriety, and he was presented it by his sponsor, my great-grand sponsor, Don Miller, who is over in hospice in Savannah dying of bone cancer. Last week, Mr. Butch went over to hospice and put Mr. Don's 29-year chip into his hand. And Mr. Don knows that this physical pain is not going to last much longer, so he and Butch talked and decided Mr. Butch may order to check on getting another sponsor, because 24 years sober doesn't mean nothing in a sponsorship family. So tonight I'm standing here, and I'm proud to announce my new great-grand sponsor is John DeLoach, the state chair of Area 16, past delegate. So I come from good stock. Now, about 9:30, y'all going to wonder, what in the world happened to him, you know? But ain't none of it their fault, I guarantee you. My problems are my own making, and I can make a sack full of them. I have the inept ability of just messing up, you know. I don't mean to. I really don't, but I do. And in December of 1993, I'm crawling around on my hands and knees in a 6x9 cell, and I'm looking for something. I don't know what I'm looking for, but I know I ain't got it. And the greatest revelation came to me that has come to me, I think, in my life, I knew without a shadow of a doubt that I couldn't quit drinking. I knew it. And there was a little peace, a little ease and comfort came with that. Because I didn't want to drink anymore. I really didn't. You know, I drank at the most inopportune times. You know, like operating a motor vehicle or work or church or, you know. I drank when it was absolutely not necessary to drink. You know? Be drunk. I mean, the book talks about the alcoholic of my type. Be drunk for days, man. Days. And sitting there still trying. It was like a spiritual awakening. If you could get up on a Sunday morning and there was that much left. Oh, man. I got that much left. You know? It was great. So here I am in this jail cell, and I know, Charlie, you can't quit. There's no quitting in you. You know, and I'm so glad that Miss Liz has brought some correction reps here that's very active and then sees Charlie's on a daily basis. And I have certainly been on paper, you know. But I really don't think you understand that maximum security prison I was in. That prison of terror. And breathing that stale, musty air of bewilderment every day. You know. And existing, you know, on that stale, sleeping on that stale bed of frustration. And existing on those crumbs of despair. Alcoholic could put you there. And that's where I was. It didn't matter how long I was going to be there. It didn't matter anymore. I knew that I could not quit drinking. But around the holidays, the correctional system gets a little hard, you know, than maybe they don't do other times of the year. And with a real good lawyer, which will come back to haunt me, and I'll talk about that after a while, and a whole sack full of money, they turn me loose. Now, I ain't free, but I'm loose. And I know without a shadow of a doubt, I'll probably be drunk before the sun comes up. Because I know I can't quit. I know I can't. But anyway, I go to my house. And house is the appropriate word. The home was gone. You know, there was mail that was delivered there, and there was three people, matter of fact, that lived there. But it was not a home. It was just a house. And I go in there and I lock that bedroom door, and nobody else is coming in. And what transpires in about the next 10 hours really doesn't make for good conversation in mixed company, and you wouldn't believe it anyway, probably, so it doesn't matter. But the next morning, I walk out to the kitchen, and my wife is standing there at the counter. And she said, I didn't expect to see you. I said, I didn't expect to be here. I said, but we got to do something. We got to do something. I'm ready to go get drunk now. We're going to have to call Georgia Regional or take me back to Chatham County or something. I said, I don't want to drink no more, but I need to drink so bad I can't stand it. That didn't seem to upset her very much. And she reached down under the counter and set this book up on the bar there. And I looked at it, and on the cover of the book, it said Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, what's that? She said, that's a book. I said, I can see it's a book, but I ain't never seen it before. She said, I've had it for a couple of years. And I said, well, how come I ain't never seen it? She said, I had it in the bill drawer. I didn't even know it had a bill drawer. You know? So, you know, no reason I'd know that. But anywho, I'm looking at this book, and I open it up, and it's got this inscription on the cover in the inside of the jacket. And it says, the words in this book will bring you peace. The words in this book will save his life. When he's ready, I'll be there. May God bless you and keep you until then. David Schaffner, April 1992. Now, I don't know David Schaffner. I don't know Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't know much about God blessing people. But I know good and well something's got to be done with Charlie Boy. And she said, we're going to go see somebody at 5 o'clock this afternoon, if you can hang on. I said, we are. She said, oh, yeah, I done called. I said, oh, well, all right. So I hang on. 5 o'clock, we up in front of this building, sit in this little room. Here walks in this guy. He introduces himself, and he says, I'm the assessor. And I said, you're the who? He said, I'm the assessor. I'm here to assess you. And I'm thinking, well, I ain't really never been assessed before. This might all be fun, you know? So I'm ready. I'm ready for the assessing. And he says, did you come from a broken home? And I said, yes, I did. He said, when did your dad leave? And I said, my dad didn't leave. My mama did. He said, tell me about that. I said, I don't want to talk about it. He said, no, you misunderstand. Tell me about it. I said, I don't want to talk about it. So he makes this note. He makes a notation. He says, you got a military service? And I said, yes, sir. What branch was you in? United States Marine Corps. How long? 6 years. What years? 1966, 1972. Do you see any combat? Yes, sir. Tell me about it. I said, I don't want to talk about it. He said, no, you misunderstand. I'm here to assess. You got to tell me. I said, I don't want to talk about it. He makes another little notation. He says, how about your family life? And I said, well, we got our ups and downs. And, man, I don't know if a bug flew in her mouth. We thought we was going to have to do the Heimlich on her. She was... And I mean, she's choking up big time. And he don't ask me to talk about that. He just makes another notation. And he says, Mr. Gow, do you drink? And I said, yes, sir. How much you drink? I said, well, I'll drink a six-pack or two now and then. He said, now that sounds like a lie. I said, it is a lie. I said, mister, I drink all I can hold all the time. There's got to be one condition and one condition only, my drinking. I have got to be at least semi-conscious. Other than that, I drink all I can hold every time. Makes a little notation of that. He looks at her and he says, well, I think we ought to keep it. She says, good. And they buzz her out. They don't buzz me out. Then they take me in this room and strip me of everything but my Fruit of the Looms, man. They take my watch. They take everything. And I'm standing there and they give me this dress. It's one of these dresses you can tie it in the front or tie it in the back. It don't make no difference. You're going to be embarrassed, you know. Then they give you these unifoot slippers, you know. They ain't got no bend in them. You can wear them on your left foot or right foot. It don't make no difference. Unifoot slippers. Now, I don't know why these places are like this, but, man, you can hang meat in there, you know. And they said, are you all right? And I said, well, I'm kind of cold. And they hand me this fishnet. I mean, it's like one of them things your grandmother knitted. I mean, it wouldn't even make a crab trap. 12-count shrimp can swim right through them holes. You know? Now, I'm standing here in this dress and these Unifoot slippers and this fishnet around me, and I'm thinking, boy, things are changing. I mean, in less than 48 hours, you are incarcerated. They cut you loose. You have the greatest revelation you ever had in your life. You have been assessed. And you're standing here in a dress, Unifoot slippers, and fishnet. What's next? You know? This is not what I envisioned. You know? And I was a great visionary. I come from a long line of visionaries. And I could visionary, man, I could have our two-sided conversations, and I'm the only one in the truck. You know? But visionary, it takes skill to be a real visionary. It takes the right ambiance. It takes, you know, everything got to be just right. And my vision, you got to find a place to really do good visionary. And where I found was on the east side of Savannah, where I lived, was the oldest cemetery in Savannah. And I'd drive in the back of Bonaventure Cemetery. And I'd park, and I'd turn my country music on real low, real low. Got to be low. And I'd have whatever's going to be there, right there. And I'd commence the visionary. And I'd visionary for hours. Now, the insanity of that is, if I got out of my truck and stood on my toolbox, I could see the roof of my house. Savannah has got a real climate differential. Summertime, it can be 120 degrees with the heat index. Wintertime, it can be 20 below with the wind chill. And I'm still out there visionary. I got central air and heat, you know. I got a $2,000 bedroom suit, you know. And I'm out here in this pickup truck visionary. And the neighbors saw me, could see me. They asked my wife, what in the world is Charlie doing down there at the cemetery at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning? I mean, 2 or 3 times a week. What in the world could he possibly be doing down there? She'd just shake her head. Oh, he's visionary. Yeah. Your past kind of catches up with you, see? But I didn't have none of this visionary. And they put me in this room. It's got a little hospital bed and a little metal stand and a restroom. That's it. No TV, no nothing. And I'm standing here in my dress and Unifoot slippers and fishnet. Door opens. In walks Rosie Greer. I mean, this dude's about 6'4", 350 pounds. Got a Sports Illustrated magazine in one hand and a straight back chair in the other. And he puts that straight back chair over there in the corner and he sits down. He said, how are you? I said, I'm all right. He said, I'm the observer. And I said, you're the observer? He said, yeah, I'm here to observe. I said, are you going to sit there all night? And he said, I sure am. He said, ain't you going to get in that bed? I said, I sure am. So all night long, Rosie's reading Sports Illustrated, and I'm observing Rosie. You know? Now, the next day, they take you up to the third floor for a medical examination. And in walks this doctor. An Indian doctor. I ain't talking about an Apache or a Cherokee, an Indian doctor. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I mean, I ain't prejudiced against the Indian doctor. But this Indian doctor, I mean, he was an Indian. And with his broken English, he's trying to tell me what he's going to do. And with my broken English, I'm trying to understand what he's doing. And all of a sudden, he reaches over, he goes, washes his hands, and he walks over and he grabs one of them one-fingered latex gloves and a jar of petroleum jelly and turns around and grins. And I said, Doc, I don't know what's wrong with me, but where you get ready to hunt, it ain't there. No. That dog ain't gonna hunt. He said, but it's part of the procedure. I said, it ain't part of this procedure. Well, you'll have to go get observed some more. And I said, fine. I got no problem being observed. You can go assess me some more. But we ain't doing that. Well, this goes on a day or two, you know, two or three days. And they're feeding me out of these styrofoam plates and plastic spoons. But I make great progress. And all of a sudden, they put me out in general population, this big day room. And I'm walking around trying to find myself. And my fishnet and my dress and my unifoot slippers. And they said, well, you're going to group. I said, where? Today you go to group. Well, I ain't never been to group. And I don't know what group is either. Now, I want to say straight off, one of my dear friends in this program was there about the last second or third day before I got out of this place. And he is a fine human being. He's one of the greatest men I know in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm not making fun of this profession whatsoever. You know, and don't take it that way, but it's just the way it seemed to me at that time, you know. But I'm sitting here in this room full of people, and all of a sudden in walks the counselor. You know he's the counselor because he says he's the counselor. And I don't know what a counselor does until he tells me. And a counselor deals with issues. Well, it's hard for me to figure up an issue right now. I mean, I'm sitting here in a dress, you know. But he's asking these people, and he finally asked me, you know, and he's, I said, well, I don't reckon I got any issues. He said, oh, yeah, we got issues. We got issues. He said, well, just why are you here? I said, oh, well, I can't quit drinking. And I love the way Tom Brady wrote it, because it must be in the counselor education thing. But this counselor had been to that school, too. And he says, oh, no. He said, now, it is true you have a biochemical genetic disorder affecting the hypothalamic information control center of your brain. It is when you ingest ethyl hydroxide, it forms acetide, which combines with dopamine producing tetrahydroisoquinoline, and you lose control. I said, no, sir, I can't quit drinking. And he's telling me I ain't even ready for group. So he sent me out of group. And I was supposed to go over here in this day room again. Well, in this day room, they got this bar over here on the wall. And it's got a sliding glass door on it. And everybody that was in the dresses and the fishnet and the unifoot slippers were lined up against that wall at the bar. Well, I ain't the sharpest pin in the cushion, but I figured that's where I ought to go. So I'm right over there in the line. And we're standing anal canal to elbow, and all of a sudden, the sliding glass door opens. This little nurse steps up there and sits this Easter basket right on the counter. And in this Easter basket, it's got all these little cupcake holders in it. And all these little cupcake holders got these jelly beans in them. Every kind of jelly bean a man can think of. Red ones and blue ones, and speckled ones, white ones, all kinds. And we all move. She just serves one at a time. You don't rush. Stay orderly. And you just move right on down the line. She got to me, and she looked at my chart. She said, I see you've been assessed. And I said, yes, ma'am. I see that you have been observed. I said, oh, yes, ma'am, more than once. She says, I see that you refuse medical treatment. I said, well, you can put it that way if you want to. But we ain't going into that. And she says, well, you can have two of these, and one of these. So I took two of them, one of them. Gave me a little shot of orange juice, washed it all down with. And then I said, well, what do I do now? She said, well, you go back to group. I said, they just kicked me out of group. She said, they won't kick you out now. I'm back in group. And maybe, it seemed like an eternity, but maybe 20 minutes or so, 30 minutes. And somebody in that place found a thermostat. And son, the temperature started rising. Off comes the fishnet. I done got this dress hiked up. All of a sudden, I get the second greatest revelation I've ever had in my life. My feet don't work. And I'm looking, and I said, well, maybe I got my Unifoot slippers on wrong. And I can get down to get them off, but I can't get up. In walks the counselor. He wants to talk about issues. I got one now. He said, I said, my feet don't work. He said, that's not an issue. I said, the heck it ain't. It was working when I come in here. They ain't working now. Well, we did that for a while. You know? All of a sudden, I'm standing there in front of line one day. The little nurse says, you can't have any of them. You can't have any of them. And you can only have one of those. So I got none of them, one of those. Went back to group. Counselor says, we got any issues? I said, well, might have one. He said, what's that? I said, you know, if I could get me a pint of that wild turkey, I wouldn't need them four pills y'all just took away from me. Well, he makes a big notation of that. You know. I don't know why I was so obsessed about that I couldn't quit drinking. In that particular time, in my mind, I'm sure it wasn't like that. But nobody would hear me. Nobody would just hear me. I don't care about my childhood. I don't care about the war. I can't quit drinking. And won't nobody talk to me about that? Nobody. That's what I thought. That's just what I perceived in my mind. It's not the way it was. It wasn't the way it was at all. Those people help people every day. You know? But in my mind, nobody would do it. Because I was still in that maximum security prison. You know? I was so scared that when you let me out, I'm going to do it again, because now you done took the only thing that kept me from wanting to drink. Now, of course, it makes your feet not work. But the obsession to drink is lifted, baby. It is lifted. Well, all of a sudden one day, I'm in the big doctor's office. And he says, Charlie, you are a sad case. But I think we've done about all we can do for you. Besides that, your insurance has run out. You just won't get honest, Charlie. You won't, and I don't know why. We're here to help you. We ask you about your mama, and you end up talking about our mama. You know? That ain't what we're talking about. We ask you to get this stuff out of you about this war. You just say, I don't want to talk about it. We're never going to get anywhere. And maybe it was time for God to tell me it was okay to say it. So I tell him, what do you want to hear? You want to hear how I wonder how a 20-month-old baby, what can he do wrong to make your mama leave? At 20 months old. You want to know how every time my daddy would get into that jug, he'd say, boy, don't you ever give your heart to a woman, because they'll just rip it out and leave you flopping like a fish out of water. Is that what you need to hear? And he'd say it over and over, and he said, do you understand? And I'd say, yes, sir, I understand, but I didn't understand. Because she sent me birthday cards and Christmas cards every year. And they all said, I love you, Charlie. I'm your mother. I'm sorry things didn't work out. But don't you ever doubt that I love you because I'm your mother. And I'll always love you. That's what I wanted to believe. You want to know that when I'm 15 years old, I got tired of being beat. So one day he went to work and I got on a Greyhound bus and I went to Jackson. And that 250-mile ride, I'm thinking, going to be all right now. I ain't going to be beat no more. I'm going to go there and I'm going to open that white picket fence. I'm going to walk up on them steps and I'm going to ring that doorbell. And she's going to walk out there one of them June Cleaver, Leave It to Beaver dresses on. That little string of white pearls around her neck. Holding one of them platters of homemade cookies. And it's going to be all right now. I'll show him. I'll prove him wrong. I'll prove him wrong today. Are we getting anywhere, doctor? You getting this down? Is this therapeutic? And all of a sudden the cab driver says, this is it, boy. And I look and she ain't even got a picket fence, but that's okay. She ain't got a porch either, but that's okay. And I step up on them brick old blocks and I knock on that aluminum storm door that's got the bottom screen halfway kicked out. Anybody ever seen one of them? And I step back off them brick old blocks. And she comes to the door, but she ain't wearing a June Cleaver Leave It to Beaver dress on. And she ain't got no pearls around her neck. She's holding something, but it ain't a platter of homemade cookie. And somewhere in the back, somebody's hollering, who is it? Get them out of here. And the first words out of her mouth is, what are you doing here? And I'm saying, I won't come live with you, Mama. I don't want to live with Daddy anymore. I don't want to get beat no more. I don't want to hate no more. I just want to come live with you. And she steps off in brick old blocks and she says, Charlie, I'm your mama. I love you. And I'm sorry things didn't work out the way they did. And I don't know what's going on with you and your daddy. But you need to go to kind of get it straightened up if you can. Because you can't stay here. You just can't stay here. And I turn around and I'm walking off and she's hollering, where are you been? Where are you going? But I don't look back. Only thing in my mind is that SOB was right. He was right, dadgummit. And I was going to prove him wrong, but he's right. Is that helpful? You got to hear the decibel sound of a 3-year-old baby screaming because you just shot her mama. And the only thing louder than that baby screaming is a guy that you shared a toothbrush with 2 hours before that's hollering, Charlie, find my arms. Don't let them take me out here without my arms, Charlie. You find my arms. And I'm saying, I'm going to find them. I'll find them. And the baby's screaming and he's screaming and I can't find his arms. And the baby keeps on screaming. So you shoot the baby too. And you come back home because you ain't found his arms and they call you a baby killer. But you ain't no baby killer. You just can't find his arms. How therapeutic is this, doctor? All you've done is sentenced me to another year of nightmares. That's all you've done. So I'm wiping the snot out of my nose and he's going changing his drawers. And he comes back with his prescription pad and here he starts. Man, I'm supposed to, I could be a picket fence. He says, you'll be on this the rest of your life. He said, and you need extensive aftercare. Okay. One of the greatest things those people ever did in that place was take me to an AA meeting, though. And it happened to be my home group's 50th anniversary. It was probably... there's almost as many people as in here now. And they had it over in this it's a school, and they have it in this cafeteria, and they got a big stage in the back, and but in, it's got like a pit around it, like a bull ring, actually. About four steps down, and you go into this part, and we had all these tables, and all these people were in there. Now, I didn't know what that was. Didn't really matter to me, because they said if you want, it's not mandatory, but if you want to go, you can smoke. And I said, shoot, I'm in. Because by that time, I'd made such progress, I was back in civilian clothes again. And I didn't have any shoelaces and had this big orange armband on. But here we go to this AA meeting. Now, I ain't got no idea what they're doing. They put us way up in the nosebleed section. Only thing I was waiting for was the smoking lamps lit. And boy, here we are puffing and a-puffing. And they get started with this deal. Now, I guess it's the preacher. He stands up and says something. You know, I can't. It's hard to hear way up there. And say a prayer that I ain't never even heard of before. Then they get around and start talking about announcements. You know, and this little guy, he stands up and starts talking about the upcoming events. And I know right off, this is family-oriented. Because they're talking about Susie's second-year birthday. You know, they talking about Joey's third-year birthday. All of a sudden, Mary's going to celebrate her first year. Oh, Lord, the house comes down then, you know. And they move it right on up. I mean, heck, they talking about grown-ups, you know. Clyde's going to celebrate 29 years. Yay, Clyde, and all this stuff. And I'm thinking, well, golly, man, got to quit his day job to be here. Well, all of a sudden they stop and they start fellowshipping. And I'm sitting up here huffing and a-puffing. All of a sudden here walks up this long, tall drink of water. He sticks out his hand and he says, my name's David. And I look up and I said, howdy. I'm Charlie. He said, yeah, I know who you are. He said, it's good to see you. And I said, well, it's... he said, I know you. And I said, I don't think you know me. I don't think I know you. I ain't. He said, no, I've been where you been. I said, oh, you out on bail too? No, I ain't out on bail. But he said, we'll talk. And he was the only person in that 300 group arena that walked up there in the nosebleed section and talk to those guys that didn't have any shoestrings and the orange armband around their arm. The only one. Why he did it, I don't know. Doesn't matter why he did it. You know. So I leave this place. Anyway, I want to share this one thing too. The guys rooming with, they moved when we had double occupancy then. And it was dog-eared and had stuff underlined and highlighted. I mean, it'd been through the mill. And I'm thinking, well, this ain't much of a present. But, no, man, I don't want to take the book. He said, no, Charlie. He said, I don't know why, but I can't get this thing. He said, but you're going to get it. You take this book. You're going to get it, Charlie. There's some reason why we were there tonight. And you're going to get it. I didn't know what it was, you know. But anyway, that afternoon we got through with all this stuff. It's the last time I truly believe that I even contemplated which way I wanted to go. Because I knew if I pulled out of that parking lot and turned right and went up to the stop sign and turned left, went through the red light and took immediate right, I'd be standing right in front of the liquor store. That man knew me up one side and down the other. If he saw me coming, he had it packaged by the time I got inside. That guy would give me credit because I was such a good customer. He'd let me write hot checks because I was such a good customer. He'd let me forge my wife's signature on a credit card because I was such a good customer. Or if I pulled out of that parking lot and turned left, and went around a big curve and went to a stoplight, turned left again, the third building on the right is where they had them meeting. I can't stand here and tell you today why I did that, but I turned left. My story could end right now because it's all uphill from now on. You know. And I walked in that building, there was an old man sitting over in the corner, and he looked right into the bowels of my soul. He said, "What's your problem?" I said, "I can't quit drinking." And his face just lit up, man. You had thought he won the lottery or something. You know what he told me? He said, "I can't quit either, son. That's why I'm here. Welcome home." See, he didn't say all these great, profound things that you hear in these meetings. Things like, you know, if you didn't drink, you wouldn't get drunk. Did everybody in here just start with 30 years of sobriety? Well, you just don't drink. Now, I mean, that may be an Al-Anon statement. And I don't mean no, good Lord, no, I don't mean no disrespect to Al-Anon people. But I'm telling you, you know when I heard it the first time? I was looking through a 2-inch piece of plexiglass. I was 16 years old, and I was looking at my grandmother on the other side. She's saying, "Charlie, you know if you wasn't drinking that stuff and doing that stuff and running with all them people, you wouldn't be here where you are." And I'm saying, "Yes, ma'am, I know. Charlie, if you wasn't drinking that stuff and doing that stuff and messing around with all them guys, I wouldn't be spending my retirement trying to keep you out of the federal penitentiary." And I'm saying, "Yes, ma'am, I know. I know. I don't need my intelligence questioned. I know I don't need to drink. I know that when I drink, bad things happen. I know without a shadow of a doubt that when I don't drink, I got a shot. But I got to have step one before I can do anything else. And somebody in this room has got to understand that I can't quit." This program puts it real eloquently. It says you're powerless over alcohol, Charlie. Let me give you an illustration, Hoss. You're like a man who's lost his legs. You ain't never going to grow no new. You have lost the power of choice in drink. Oh, yeah, you may not be powerless over your elbow, but you can't quit, Charlie. And you forget about that first drink, Hoss. You know what thing happened almost 30 years ago? You don't ever have to worry about that first one anymore, Charlie. It's that next one that's going to get you. And you better concentrate on that next one and quit worrying about that first one. I know you can't quit. I can't quit either. That's why I'm here. Now, I have found a way to space them out, is what the old man said. That particular time, it spaced them out 42 years. But that old man was an alcoholic. And that old man knew how to talk from the heart. And that old man didn't tell me what to do. That man showed me what he did. And we went back to this meeting again. It wasn't 300 people. But they said a prayer I didn't understand. And they said a few things, not near as many announcements as that other guy did, but they had a few. Then they circled the wagons and they got to talking. And guess what they talked about? Drinking. Imagine that. I'm in an AA meeting and they're talking about drinking. That's rare. They wasn't so much talking. Some people come in there, they talk about how they're fighting and clawing, how we're all a bunch of yahoos and don't believe this. And I know the court system sends us here too, and that's a good thing. I ain't talking about none of that. But we hear the stories about how the last place I wanted to be was an Alcoholics Anonymous. It took me about 10 seconds to know I was home, baby. This is my roost. And you can't run me out of here with a dirty mop. You know, I'm here. And I asked him, I said, okay, now what do I do? That happened to be at noon. He said, at 5:30, we're going to talk about it again, you be here. So at 5:30, I came back. We talked about it. 6:30, I said, okay, what do I do now? He said, 8 o'clock, we're going to talk about it again, you be here, I'm going home. I said, well, okay. So I came back. 8 o'clock. Look up there in the front of the room. Guess who's there? That long, tall drink of water came up and shook my hand. And I'm thinking, huh? Now I got to put all this knowledge I've got to work. So I swander up there to the front. And I said, David, I need me a temporary sponsor. Son, looked like I hit him in the face with a mud pie. He said, let me tell you something, Hammer. I don't do temporary. You come in here for some relief or you come in here for some recovery? Now, I didn't know the difference, but I knew the right word to say. And I said, I came in here for recovery. And he handed me a pamphlet. It says questions and answers on sponsorship. He said, you know what a sponsor is? And I said, no, sir, not really, I guess. He said, you read this. You come see me and I'll tell you. He said, what in the world do you think I'm supposed to do for you anyway? Fix me. I kind of put a little grin on his face. And he said, nah, we don't do it. We don't do it that way. Well, that weekend, he invited me over to his house. And upstairs, they had converted a bedroom into kind of like a little office, or just had a chair and a couch and some things. And we sat down in there, and he kind of tells me his story. I tell him about my upcoming court date, you know, and about all I can share, you know. We get the book out. We listen to a tape or two, and then we get the book out. And I take step one and step two that night. Just like that. See, the word God, I'd heard that. I mean, it seemed like, and it was in the asket basket. When I got here, my whole vocabulary consisted of about four-letter words. And God or mother was in all of them, you know. Until it was explained to me exactly, and maybe this will help the guy that wrote this today, what they told me. Charlie, you know what cussing is? Well, no. It's a crutch for conversational cripples. Well, that's the way I've always talked. That's the only way I know how to express myself. Well, maybe you shouldn't express yourself. maybe you ought to listen to people who have got a bigger vocabulary. Oh, okay. But we take step one, we take step two, and we walk down the stairs and stand there at the door, and I'm on fire, baby. What do you want me to do now, David? Give me an assignment. I am ready to go. And he puts his hand on my shoulder, and he gave me the biggest assignment I've ever had in my life. He says, Charlie boy, just start being nice to people. It ain't never too early to start being nice. What an assignment. What an assignment. But this journey started just like that with me. And we went through the 12 steps of recovery. Just finished going through again on another aspect of my life. It's continuous, you know. And I would be wrong to stand up here and take your people's time, precious time, if I didn't share with you how these steps had given me a little bit of honesty. And it gave me hope, and it gave me faith. And I found courage because I was scared to death. And all of a sudden, there's a little integrity there because I was willing. And I got humble. And I found some brotherly love because I try to be nice to people. And all of a sudden, there's some justice and some discipline going on. But I got to persevere. And I got to always be aware. And all of a sudden, there's some love and service because of this stuff. These 12 spiritual principles are what I have to do to be nice to you. Because if I can be nice to you, I will reconnect with my God. And that's all He wants me to do. That's all. Just be nice to you. If I'm nice to you, I reconnect with you. Or reconnect with you, I reconnect with God. What a concept. Even though I can't quit drinking. How about that? How about that? And that fourth step, I'll tell on myself. I was diligent about it. I was fearless and I was thorough. Then all of a sudden I turned the page. And it said, this step could be postponed. All right. I believe I'll just ride on this spiritual hilltop for a little while. This fourth step's in my back pocket. We're going to meetings and I'm hoping against hope that his work schedule and my work schedule are still conflicting. And this goes on about 6 weeks. We got a ramp in the back of our clubhouse, and we was walking up the ramp one night. Nothing had been said. And he just turned around. And he gave me that look that old man looked at me. He looked right into the bowels of my soul again. He said, you know, Charlie, it don't have to be with me. But if you don't do it, you're going to get drunk. He turned around, walked off. But I knew he knew what he was talking about. That Saturday, I got my best drinking partner. I called him. I said, Scotty boy, you need to come over here. He was my best drinking partner. He was my best friend. He was my oldest son. Because when he was 16 years old, he'd rather ride around in his daddy's pickup truck and drink whiskey and go to football practice. Because his old man was so cool. I was cool, all right. I ain't cooler, I'd be a popsicle. But we went out in the backyard and I told him what I was about to do. And he didn't understand. And I said, you don't have to understand. But we're going to do it. And I told him every despicable thing his daddy has ever done. Best I could remember. And I stressed the importance of how scared I was. And I need to be free of that maximum security prison I was in. And I don't know if there's clemency in this stuff or not, but I got to do it. I told him about every despicable act I'd ever done. And I did not list assets. because I don't want my God to remove my asset. I don't think that's what step four is about too much. What I told him was blocking me from the sunlight of the Spirit. And I was not going to receive one of those fifth step promises until I did that. It ain't going to happen, Charlie. It just ain't going to happen. So about 2.5 hours, we finished. And I'm crying, he's crying. He goes off and gets drunk. And I go to step 6 and 7. That summer, he gets married. And he allows me to be the best man. That's a proud day. Proud day. And my ex-wife and husband-in-law is coming down. And they're on that list. Wherever. So after that reception, I get them out in the front yard, so we've got a little working room, you know. And I tell her, I want to take full responsibility of all the sadness and the heartache that I put you through for all them years. And I want to tell you, Don, I apologize for breaking your jaw on your own front porch. That 99 days in lockup probably didn't do much for you. It got me, you know, and I'm sorry about that. And I told her, I said, if there's anything I can do to get these books balanced, I'm willing to do. And I'm not trying to put a damper on this day, because our son is getting married, and it ought to be something good. She said, why are you doing this? I said, well, I'll tell you, I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. And this is part of my amends. This is the 9th step in our program. And it's just what I have to do to clean off my side of the street the best I can. She said, really? I said, yep. She said, they got chip systems down here? I said, oh, yeah. And I pull out my little yellow 6-month chip. And I explain them all to her. I mean, I give her the real lowdown on it. You know, if you really want to surrender to win. And I mean, the whole 9 yards. She reaches in her purse and pulls out a 4-year medallion. Son, I was livid. I had to go to my sponsor for this. And I'm telling him, man, I am spilling my guts to this hussy, and I'm telling her how sorry I am and all it. I've been sober 6 months. She's been sober 4 years. She ain't never said a word to me. And he gives you this sponsor talk. David's full of sponsor talk. He puts his hand on my shoulder and he says, well, Charlie boy, looks like you didn't make the list. Well, I didn't understand that then. But today, I'm sitting here with a 10-year chip in my pocket. About 90 days, God bless me, it'll be 11 years. And she's not even eligible for a white one anymore. That's why we take these steps. That's why. See, she couldn't quit drinking either. But somehow she found a choice. And somehow she'd sit in the meetings and say, well, if you just don't drink, you won't get drunk. You just don't drink. I hear her now. You just don't drink. She pounded her fist on the bar and wondered, how in the world this happened? Where had been all my high resolve? I've got to hear myself say I can't quit drinking. I've got to hear it every day. And if you're one of the ones that say, well, I say that, I am not picking on you, but don't look down your nose at me because I can't quit. Don't do that. If you got a choice, good for you. But don't condemn me because I don't. And don't condemn me because I look at a newcomer and say, it's okay if you can't quit. We'll work on a little bit of honesty. And maybe that'll come. It's okay. We're here. And it's good to see you. It's really good to see you. I don't care if you got whiskey on your breath or not. Heck, I can't quit drinking. So it's okay. Now, somewhere in that spiel, you will tell them, now, it is hard to stay sober. Drink it. For me, it's downright impossible. But we got a defense. And maybe, just maybe, we can teach you how to space them out. Maybe. Maybe. That's what he told me. Because my biggest fear when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous was, what if this don't work? I don't know if any of y'all ever thought about that, but I did. What if this don't work? And you know what he told me? Yeah. But what if it does? What if you do come up, wake up in the morning, and you haven't drank all day? What would have you done different, Charlie? Well, I came to an AA meeting. I prayed. I think I prayed. I guess that's about all I did. Came to an AA meeting, and I prayed. Do it again today and see what happens. Just see. That's how I space them out. Then my sponsor got me into service. I am DCM of Zone C, District 5 of Savannah. I have been DCM for the Savannah Group for over 10 years. I am the designated coffee maker. And I am good at it. Now they talk, you know, people will say, well, what about this spirit of rotation? I ain't got no problem with it. Get there before I do, you make all the coffee you want. But when my sponsor introduced me to that bun coffee maker, he said, there's four pots here. And any time I walk into this room, I better be able to choose which four pots I want to drink out of. I said, but everybody's sitting out on the porch. He said, you ain't got a chair out there. You're making coffee in here. And everybody that walks up here, you're going to say, it's really good to see you. I said, but I don't know nobody. He said, I didn't say that. But you're going to tell them, it is really good to see you. Now, that didn't happen right off the bat. But if you come to 1501 Eisenhower on a Monday or Thursday night, you're going to see this old Tennessee hillbilly who's been transformed into a card-toting Georgia redneck standing beside a bun coffee maker, and he's going to say, it's really good to see you. And I'll mean it. I promise you, I'll mean it. A lot of things have happened in my life, in my sobriety walk. That woman that put up with me, I'll put it this way. I affectionately call her the plaintiff. Put it like that. 2 weeks ago on a Thursday, we celebrated a 20-year anniversary, wedding anniversary. Wasn't a lot of flowers because last Thursday, we finalized the divorce papers. That ain't her fault. She tried, but there was just too much damage done. And one of the things is what I'm going to end up finishing with tonight. December 2 years ago, I get this call about 3 o'clock in the morning. That if you're a parent out here, kind of nuts, guts kind of knot up, you know. And the call is, it happened. Scotty boy flipped a Jeep Cherokee 8 times, and he's dead. This is why I always introduce my sponsors and the people that keeps me here on a daily basis. Because I called David as soon as I hung up. All I could say was, okay. And my wife's falling apart, and I can't even touch her. And I'm calling David. And I'm saying, I don't know what to do, man. They just called Scott. He's dead. And I don't know what to do, David. You know what he told me? You know what he said? Nothing. On my best days, it may take me 25 minutes to get from where I lived to where David lived. In 15 minutes, he's knocking on my door. And he walks in, and Lucy walks in, and Lucy sits there and holds my wife and lets her cry like a baby for 2.5 hours. And you know what she says to her? Nothing. And I sit there and I just look at David. And I don't know what to do. And you know what he said? Nothing. Within 12 hours, my grand sponsor is calling me and he says, Charlie, I'll drive you to North Carolina and we'll stay up there as long as we have to. It don't matter. You don't have to do this alone. Did he tell me what to do? He didn't say nothing. They were there. And that's what true sponsorship is. They're there. And through this divorce, and it's been nasty. It's been real nasty. He has never once told me what to do. He's just there. I got the greatest sponsor Alcoholics Anonymous has ever produced. You know, I heard Bill Sanders say, you got to have 2 qualifications to be a sponsor. You got to be at least 1 step in front of them. And under any and all conditions, never agree to go out drinking with them. And I think that is a good policy to start with. You know. But my sponsor is a step guider. And he reads the black. And he says, there's 3 sides to this thing, Charlie boy. 3 sides. And they're all equal. Yeah, you make coffee. Big hairy deal. What other group commitment have you got? You know? We've got some old timers in our place too. And some of them says, yeah, I started the group back up 1972, I think it was. I said, that's wonderful. What have you done for Alcoholics Anonymous this millennium? That old man that made me come to my second meeting, he was there washing ashtrays one day. And they said, Bob, what in the world are you doing? You're over 40 years sober. What in the world are you doing? Washing ashtray. He said, because they let me. He died. The last assembly he came to, he was alternate GSR. That man has been the state delegate. He never stopped. My sponsor puts it this way. I'll serve till they set me down. Golly, man. Really? Till they set me down, Charlie boy. Till they set me down. I come from good stock. When I was in that jail, I wrote a little bit of stuff. Because you from Tennessee, you write all these things. But it has taken me about 8 years to finish this thing. And that night, when I was standing in front of Scotty's casket, and his little boy walked up and put his hand on Papa's trouser, I sat there and I said the third step prayer. And I thank God from the bottom of my heart that I knew him better. And I put at that time my 8-year chip in his hand. And I said, take it with you. Take a little bit of my sobriety with you. Because a whole lot of me died the night you died, Scotty boy. A whole lot of me died the night you died. It was late one dark and dreary night. He was riding in the rain, this young, restless outlaw that was aching with pain. And he slumped over his saddle seat and he looked towards the sky and said, God, I just wish I'd die. And he was searching for a place to lay his weary head, and he unmounted his mount and he unrolled his bed. And he was looking through the blackened sky and he's searching through his mind and he thought of all the broken hearts that he had left behind. Yeah, young, restless outlaw, you're living too fast. Think you better slow down. It's not going to last. Because you see, I've been through it all myself. Now that's all in the past. But the outlaw's reign is over. His trail's come to an end. You see, he's the kind of man that dies without a friend. Never has that starry night. He never has that home. You see, the life of the outlaw's life is the same as my own. But times, they are changing. And this outlaw has been reborn. No longer fear and hate and resentment is his crown of thorns. It's love and peace and faith in the sunshine and the rain for this old and wore-out outlaw has finally stopped the pain. God bless Alcoholics Anonymous. God bless.